All right, so on that note, all yours. Do you want the mic?
Yeah.
Okay. If people can't hear in the back or there's an issue, please raise your hands. There's no point sitting through a whole meeting and not hearing what's going on, so please. So.
Ooh, shit.
What's up? Shut up, Mike. It's kind of, I guess I'll start this off by saying it's a little upsetting that so few of you consider yourselves AUK experts, especially considering that the language is actually so simple, which is basically what we're going to cover today. I wanted to do kind of a early 40s movie thing and do the credits up front so that you guys walk out get that spiel first. So I work for Tablet. Those will be the guys in the back of the room heckling me in about 2 minutes. And I wanted to thank Ike for putting up the awesome MTV-style preview for the talk and the wonderfully nice biography, because I was too lazy to get it in myself. All right, so this is AUK, a love story. And I'd like to kick it off with a little bit of a historical discussion. I think historical discussions aren't necessarily relevant for computing, but it does help to understand a little bit of the intent, which is useful. I realize these slides look really good from 6 inches away and probably look terrible, so for this one, I'll just sort of give you the gist. Basically, Alfred Aho decided in 1977 that he needed a language to do day-to-day data processing. For him, this was specifically for handling grades, editorial correspondence, and budgets. This guy named Brian Kernighan sat near him and they talked about it a little bit. He said, "Wow, that's a great idea. I want something very similar." And they started to collaborate on what such a language should look like. In fact, they started to model it off of GREP initially. So they did this for a while, and they ultimately came up with a language specification that was sort of a mix of the open-ended Lexeme textual analysis ability of Lex combined with the terseness of GREP, all mixed in with some nice C syntax. Peter Weinberger, then a rising star at Bell Labs, was able to take that concept and write the first AUK runtime environment in about 6 days. So in 1979, the first AUK runtime interpreter appeared in version 7 Unix. This is called OAuk now, which stands for Old AUK. It had very few features. It did not have the ability for users to define functions. Regexes had to be constant. You couldn't basically construct a regular expression out of strings. It didn't really have any control structures. I don't think it had any looping structures at all. Very minimal data flow control. And then in 1982, Rob Pike stole a time machine from Bell Labs, went to the future, and came back and convinced them to name it after themselves before starting work on the Blit. I'm looking for a citation on that, but I have it on good authority from a guy in Washington Square Park. That's true. So in 1985, this is really the pivotal year for AUK. A new AUK, which is called NAUK. Eventually this becomes known as the one true AUK, ships with System 5 Unix. This one went in and actually made user-defined functions, dynamic regular expressions, and a bunch of additional built-ins, and pretty much all of that was added as a result of the fact that Aho, Kernighan, and Weinberger put out this really tiny language, and then people started abusing the crap out of it and requesting features. So they added it because people liked the language. Later in 1985, Pete Weinberger's face was stenciled onto a water tower at Bell Labs. I don't think that has much to do with AUK, but it's awesome. In 1987, Perl happened. And then in 1988, the AUK programming language was published, documenting the version of AUK known as the one true AUK. This is actually the place where that phrase was coined. You can still get the one true AUK. Ryan Kernighan's personal Princeton website actually has a port of it, and does anyone know an operating system that ships with the One True Lock still?
FreeBSD.
FreeBSD. Right. macOS also ships with it. The man page is a really wonderful read, the one that Kernighan wrote. He calls the scoping implementation in NAWQ a complete botch job, I believe. So another pivotal year for it was 1992, which is when the POSIX 0.2 show and utility standards came out, and that defined a POSIX awk, which was derived from the NAWQ implementation. And awk is a required mandatory utility for any POSIX compliant system, which makes it one of, I believe, four Turing complete languages that are required by POSIX. I believe it's awk, sed, a POSIX shell, and C.
Buy macros.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. Buy macros. I think Ed is Turing complete too, so maybe it counts. Turing complete is such a meaningless measurement. So this is usually when you go and read about awk, you usually stumble upon interviews, particularly with Aho, where Aho is talking about this as a historical exercise. Like, oh man, awk's so great. You know, it really influenced people, and he's right, it really did influence people. I mean, Perl was basically written because awk was so awesome and so terrible at the same time. And I guess that explains a lot about Perl. minus the bit about Pike, that's not information everyone has. So, what I want to talk about today is not that. That's the only history we're going to do today. Because I think that awk is a modern language. In fact, I think awk is maybe the first modern scripting language. And I think that awk actually defines much of what we think of as a modern programming language. Does anyone want to throw out things they think about when they think about modern programming languages? Anyone? I've got my list. It's behind the white.
Hundreds of megabytes of binaries.
So Mike said Java. You, sir.
Two big things. You don't have to worry about memory referencing and memory reads and all memory allocation and off and all that for you. I mean, like most scripting languages. And you essentially, with named arrays, essentially have hashes, which are extremely advanced concepts.
Did everyone hear those two? Hashes and garbage collection and automatic variables. Spencer.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. But the implicit looping, where you basically have, it's the first RAD language, but you have assumptions about data input, and as long as you give it a rectangular array of data, you know, with lines and fields, you basically get all of your main loop processing for free.
So we'll call that being tremendously expressive within some sort of confine, right? You get a lot for free. So I agree with all of that, and I think the first thing to me here is that awk is very simple. I had initially done a slide that had the BNF for awk. Does everyone know the BNF is?
Back is normal form.
Yes.
Back is now or form.
That too. I believe there's somewhat of a debate between linguists about which is more correct between those two. But, anyway, it's a language for formally specifying languages, and awk has one. It's freely available. The awk POSIX standard is actually freely available from the open group. And it's a little more complicated than C and a hell of a lot less complicated than every other language that's come after it. So a part of being simple is that it's simple to learn. I think you can probably go from a, you know, pipeline usage of awk to a, you know, above average ability to use the majority of the language inside of about 3 weeks if you're trying. And I would suggest trying. Awk is expressive, particularly when parsing 2D structured data, which rectangular data. It's actually unsurpassably expressive for that purpose today. Does everyone know what expressive power is and all that fun stuff?
No, what is that?
So expressive power is first the ability to express ideas in a language, for which awk is actually pretty bad. There are lots of things awk can't express. And the second measurement is within the ideas that you're capable of expressing in your language, you have how concise or terse you're able to express those ideas. And awk, within what it's capable of doing, is tremendously expressive. It's very terse. You can do a lot with pretty little. Awk's friendly. It's an important thing. I saw this talk on Ruby. It was called a talk about joy. And that really is probably not true about Ruby, but I do think it's important in a modern language that it's enjoyable to use, it's friendly to use, and it plays well with other programs. And the other actual sort of super modern thing about awk is that it's not fast, and they didn't care that it wasn't fast. So this is a quote from the conclusion of the awk programming language, which is a phenomenal book. You should all read it two or three times. It says, for tasks like these where program development time is more important than runtime, awk is hard to beat. And that statement was made in 1988, and I would argue that statement is still true. But this was a relatively revolutionary thing to come out of Bell Labs. They were like this about everything. This is the way they felt about C. I mean, at the time, C was a very slow language compared to assembly, and awk was orders of magnitude slower than C. They didn't care, because for what you use the tool for, if speed's not important, it's a perfectly valid tool. It's very nice to use. This idea is very modern, and I'm going to point that out by quoting someone that I really... I'll stop there. This is a quote from DHH. He's the author of Rails. And he said, I'm certainly of no illusions that Rails is perfect, nor that Ruby is a speed demon. I'm sorry, Damon. And basically one of the things that 37 Signals and all of the agile methodology preachers always say is that development time is very expensive and processor time is very cheap. And this is held to be a very modern idea. In fact, it's the idea behind awk. There's a note at the top that says that Pike chose not to bring agile back from the future, which is good for all of us. So a few things before we get into some actual technical bits. All of these examples are POSIX awk. All of the limitations of these examples are also POSIX awk. We will not be covering GAWK today, or GAWK, or MAWK. How many of you know what MAWK is? Show of hands.
Different marks awk.
Yes. MAWK for data processing, it compiles down to bytecode. It's a very new awk interpreter. It's not POSIX. It's not like GAWK either, which is a superset of POSIX awk. It provides things like coroutines and file descriptors. But MAWK does less. But MAWK routinely for data lexing operations blows the doors off of things like C as far as speed goes. At least in the contrived examples that you find on the internet. We're also not going to talk about JAWK, which is, let's just not talk about it. I do recommend you check out both MAWK and GAWK. For GAWK, I think you should probably start at the man page. Alright. So this projector sucks, but this is all orange. It's all my company's branding colors. Actually, it's designed to weasel into your subconscious. All come work for us. But this is a mega Venn diagram that Ike made for me with OmniGraphle in like 5 minutes. And this is really sort of awk. Awk sits at the nexus of C syntax, Lexis, textual processing, the simplicity of greps, and steroids. The steroids here is really what Spitzer was talking about, which is that you have an implicit control structure that's inherent to the language. So the language has this inherent concept of records and fields, and you get all of that really heavy parsing for free. Okay. and you loop over all of these records that are parsed and all these fields that are parsed for you for free. And that's really about as powerful as steroids. So here's, I guess, where it becomes more important for people to see. You guys probably can't see this in the back at all, right? See what Matt can do for me here. Can you see that?
Nope.
Oh well. That's my boss, sorry. So this is the way that you encounter grub in the wild, usually. It's in a pipeline. There's this program PS. There's a grep in there, so it's PS, AUX, pipe grep, pipe awk, print 2, pipe XRX, kill dash 30. I'll buy a beer for whoever the first person who can tell me what signal 30 is.
Talk to Jesus.
That's pretty close, actually.
I'll take a shot.
It's SIGINFO. It's a signal that says that someone is requesting information from the keyboard. It also happens to be a no-op unless you've programmed for it. So this one-liner, which is usually horrifying and gives people nightmares because there's usually a 9 at the end of it, is relatively benign, actually. So I'll scan out of this. So like we said, awk operates on records and fields. Basically, you have a stream of input here. The stream of input is coming in from standard in. It's actually coming in from grep on standard in. And awk automatically parses it into records, delimiting it by a record separator. Okay, and that record separator defaults to newline. So you always move record-wise in awk. You read in a record at a time. It's like, XARGs, which reads in a line at a time, or reads in up to the first null byte at a time at dash zero, or like SED, which reads in a line at a time. But it's a record. It's a record-wise read. And each time you get a record in, you parse it into fields, and those fields are delimited by a field separator. And the default field separator for awk is one or more tabs or spaces. So the important bit here is that because it's one or more tabs or spaces, that means that this is fundamentally different than delimiters you see in stuff like sort or cut, okay? Because this is a regex delimiter. It's actually an egrep. It's an extended regex. It's not a PCRE regex. It's the 1977, the new dopest regexes that were used with egrep kind of regex. So we're going to take this. It looks exactly the same thing. That is exactly the same thing. I have a duplicate slide in here. Shit, sorry about that. All right.
Well, you also have a redundant program in the slide. It's an example of bad programming.
Yes. This one takes care of that.
He finished this at 6:23. So
come on, man.
Yes.
This
fixes it.
Well, that previous one is, I believe, famous for being on the useless use of grep pipe awk page, which is maintained by the same guy who maintains the useless use of cat and useless use of kill dash 9, which I believe he claims is every use of kill dash 9. So the point of the last slide, as he pointed out, is that that's wrong. It's actually mean to your kernel. You should be nice to your kernel. That's an extra fork exec. Awk is entirely capable of doing what grep runaway does. In fact, it's, unless you're in unbuffered mode, this is almost certainly faster than grep runaway. So we've modified the example to remove the grep because it's useless, and we've replaced it with this example, which is PSAUX pipe awk runaway, and then print $2 pipe XRX kill dash 30. And so what our awk program is now doing is it's reading record-wise, and every record that comes in, it's running against the pattern, the line, the record against the pattern runaway. Okay. And then for any record that matches runaway, it's then printing the second field, which is the second thing that is delimited by spaces and tabs. And then that pipes to XRX, which for this example, the second field is the PID, which then pipes to XARCs and sends signal 30 to all of those bits. So neither of those are particularly safe, actually, or necessarily do what you want. Because if you're matching the entire record from a PS, the basic problem is that you could match any part of the record. So this is one of the reasons why you get, well, you get the grep or the awk that you're invoking. Well, not yet. Yeah, either the grep or the awk you're invoking will show up in your PID list, because there is an RV that is the pattern that you're actually looking for. So with grep, without using grep multiple times, there's not really a way around this. With awk, however, well, it says $11 squiggly runaway. Okay. Print two. And then below that, it's exactly the same example. So, can anyone tell me what this does at all?
Make it bigger?
Print things in bigger type?
I'm trying to scroll. It's not seeming to let me.
So if the runaway regular expression matches what's in field 11.
That's right. So if field 11 matches the pattern runaway, then print 2 and pipe XARCs. So field 11 for PSAUX happens to be whatever $0 is in the process list for the program. So this last one demonstrates a slightly more nuanced version of this, which is testing for $11 actually being equivalent to runaway. So I'm looking for the equivalence to the literal string runaway, not the regular expression runaway. And what all of these examples are designed to show is that the traditional use of awk, where you just use awk as a cut, basically, or when you have a regular expression that you're trying to match on record, these can basically be replaced in awk by any expression in the awk language that has a Boolean value. And every expression in the awk language has a Boolean value. So you can pretty much put any pattern over here and have any action executed if that pattern returns a true Boolean value for the record that you're on. And there's one additional modification of this, which is that you can use a comma to say, to specify a start condition and a stop condition, wherein this action inside of the curly braces will be executed from the time the first statement becomes true until the time the second statement becomes true. So any questions so far? It's all pretty normal stuff for everyone. This is kind of how I think most people use awk every day. You don't have to use awk with PS. Alright. So, one of the points here is that awk is tremendously expressive. And this is why, one of the reasons why I feel it's still a relevant language. So here I have a very simple pipeline, and for those of you who can't read, it says PSAUX pipe time awk, and then $11 squiggly bash print $2 pipe WC-L. So what this is doing is counting the number of PIDs for a process where $0 matches bash. So effectively this means how many people are running, or how many instances of bash are running on my system for all users. And I'll um, you almost certainly can't see the result here, but awk is very slow as far as these things go, but the awk part of this expression took 0.03 seconds in real time. And the 0.00 sys time, there's probably a 1 out there somewhere, and then 0.00 of user time. And it's 1 line, it's like 13 characters to do this. Now, I did this example, which is exactly the same thing in an actual modern and considered to be beautiful programming language, and certainly one that I like very much myself. And this is Python. And I did the same thing. I timed Python, sent -c, and I basically iterated while calling sys.standardin.readline, and then I split the regex, and I made sure not to slurp in all of standard in so that it wasn't an unfair test. Python here is actually reading record-wise, just like awk does. So you're not absorbing all the read cost up front, and then an additional split cost. So then Python splits on the same regular expression as the normal field separator for awk, checks to make sure that there are 11 fields, because if you tried to search on index 10 in Python and it wasn't there, you would get an error. Search that and then printed the fields. And what you can see at the bottom is that this took 0.5 seconds in real time, which is more than an order of magnitude slower than the awk implementation. And this is a modern language, written by a modern language developer. I mean, it wasn't designed to do this necessarily. It's a general purpose language, and awk isn't. But the thing that strikes me here is that this solution is 11 times longer than the awk solution. And the 0.5 second of real time there is almost certainly because of these two imports at the top. I have no doubt that Python's I/O handling is approximately similar to awk's. And so what you have here is a non-file system cached import. And in order to actually do this operation, I have to go down to disk at least twice, because both RE and sys, again, have additional module dependencies that they have to go fetch. So this is all disk time here. And that makes it vastly less predictable. You could run this test and have much, much higher variance in the Python reaction than you would have in the awk. Basically. So this leads me to believe that awk is always 11 times more expressive than Python. And it's an order of magnitude faster. Probably not always. In this particular cooked example, it is. So I'd like to talk a little more about what you can actually do with awk, since we've done a bunch of pipeline stuff. Really boring. So this program is called the Power User Report. And what the Power User Report does is the Power User Report takes the output of PS and it reorganizes it in such a way that you can see how many processes every single user on your system is running at one time and what percentage of CPU every user is consuming at one time. And as you can see, or as you probably can't see, This program is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines long. And so what we've got here is we've got a new pattern, which uses this NR variable. Can anyone tell me what NR is in awk?
Number of records.
Okay, that's right. Spitzer's, you guys are going to have to catch up to Spitzer today. At least 3 beers up on the rest of you guys. So NR is the number of records. So we're looking for if NR is greater than 1. Which means that we're slicing out the header field, because PS by default gives you headers. And so if NR is greater than 1, I'm going to use this other fancy feature that awk has that we mentioned earlier, which is hashes or associative arrays. And I'm going to capture my user field, which is field one. I'm going to increment it by one using this nice C syntax that awk gives us. I'm then going to capture my CPU, which is in field three, and I'm going to increment my user hash value by $3 + 0. Can anyone tell me why you do $3 + 0 here?
Other than me.
When are you fine, gentlemen?
To verify it.
To verify what?
To verify.
Yes. Awk has no strict typing and no way to actually coerce. So to make something a numeral, you have to add 0 to it. We can talk a little later about what you have to do to make sure something's a string, but it's gross. So the other thing we introduced here in this example is this end pattern. Who wants to take a stab in the dark at what the end pattern is? Spitzer, I bet your teachers hated you.
Yes. Basically, it's cue the doors, this is the end, we've run out of number of records to increment, so we dump whatever we have kept. For whatever you wrote there.
I can say it's never basically, you read the entire file, now you can process that.
Because you can handle multiple files and still do that. And NR will increment NFR.
Okay, well, you're done with all files. You're done with all that, but...
Well,
yes, Spencer, what if you had standard in plus a bunch of files?
What?
What would you do if you had standard in and a bunch of files?
Well, there's a signal that ends with stamp in the pipe, right?
Okay. I guess that's this, the dash file.
Yeah.
So, you, sir.
If you exit, you're not at the end of the file, but it's still going to go to end.
Very true. And that makes a good point. If you exit from your program, it will execute end, even if you're not at the end of the file. So what it's actually doing down here, next time I do a talk, I'll stand 15 feet away from my computer. I'll send you all a link. I'm very sorry, with a personal apology on it. This is doing a printf at the bottom here. And the printf here is similar to C. Baxter in the back there discovered some fun things about aux printf that are interesting. You can't put backslash t and have it print out a tab, for example, in awk. Well, at least not in an awk. The one true awk. So this is basically saying I want to print out a 20 column left justified string space, a four digit, right justified digit, and then a floating point to precision one, followed by a literal percent sign and a new line. So this is a pretty standard human readable report type printf statement here. And in fact, this is exactly what this program prints. As you can see, at the time I was running this, my coworkers in my fellow jailed environment were probably pretty pissed at me because I was using 80% of CPU with my www user. Basically what I have is all of the users here and a list of how many processes each user has, and then a list of the CPU percentages you have here. And this is more or less the raison d'être, however you say that, why, it's aux raison d'être, doing simple reports like this that generates, human and computer readable reporting from its friend programs. Well, it is 80, so more accurate than when you said 8.
In order of magnitude? Oh, right,
okay. We're as accurate as we can be from PS. PS goes to floating point precision of 1, so we preserve that, and then we sum all of the floating point 1 precision, so we're accurate here to...
No, I just can't see.
Oh. I'm really sorry, guys. So if you can't see, I'm being very accurate to the page when I say 80%. You can also see, you can't see this, but what I have is mat, root, www, bind, and null nail are all doing things. So, because bind is doing something, I'm almost certainly being exploited. So, ultimately, probably not that accurate. Actually.
Wait, Paul Dixie's back there. Oops.
Right. For those of you who weren't here at the holiday meeting, I did a little bit of a love story for Dixie Crown. Maybe less entertaining than this, but I don't know. It's a hard race to the bottom there. This program is pretty cool, and it's only four lines, but it's not really very useful. Particularly, it's not nearly as useful as it could be, because, as we said earlier, PS gives us headers. So this is Power User Report version 2. What Power Version Report User 2 does is attempt to work with multiple invocations of the PS program. So what it does is it scans the first record and tries to find the headers it cares about, which are notably user, percent CPU, and then figures out which fields user and percent CPU are in and generates exactly the same report. I'll try to make this bigger. So, at the top, if you can see it, there is one of these new mock user-defined functions. It's pretty awesome. It's called BARF. We're lobbying to get BARF a POSIX standard. The guys in the back of the room know BARF well. BARF basically throws something to standard error and then dies. Okay. And it's a shell function. Mike wrote a love story about it on List. I think he called it the three-finger claw technique. I don't know that the author approves of that name. But anyway, we have this user-defined function. This user-defined function prints out an error message. The error message you see everywhere, it's got the name of the program, colon, fatal, so something bad happened, colon, some message. And then we do the fun thing that you have to do in awk to get something to actually go to standard error, which is pipe the string cat dash redirect ampersand 2. So is there any shell expert in the house who can tell me what that guy right there does, aside from this guy who's going to chastise me for useless use of cat?
Redirect standard out to standard error.
That's right, redirect standard out to standard error. And can anyone tell me why we didn't just do that not inside of a string in awk? Spitzer wins again, because you can't. awk has absolutely no comprehension of file descriptors or of IO redirection outside of redirecting to a variable or redirecting to a file name in the file system. It's probably the second or third worst thing about awk. And we now also, in this example, have a begin block. Not really a block. Begin is a special pattern like end. And begin happens at the beginning. It actually happens before anything is read. Can anyone tell me what this get line greater than equal to zero means and why we have that in a conditional? Empty file, empty standard input is okay. That's the equal to part of this. You with the martini. That's awesome, by the way.
It reads a line, which causes awk to do its splitting, and it returns how many fields it got.
Correct. Unless there's an error, in which case it returns -1, which is why we check. Yeah, so in a begin block, since you haven't actually handled any processing, there are no fields. Okay, and I probably should have asked this question earlier, but can someone tell me what $0 means inside of awk? Because it's not necessarily intuitive. The whole line, yes. Sometimes. Can anyone tell me something else that's fun about $0? Well, we'll get to it later. You can reinterpret it, yes. And Spitzer, for your fourth bonus question of the day.
No,
what happens when you reinterpret $0?
You reset it, and you, depending on the arc, but you get reprocessing the line. So you go to the top of the loop with the same line. It's like a continue state.
Awesome. Swing and a miss. All right.
It just resets the... It reparses it and sets the number, the greater than zero number variables to the field that were there.
That's mostly correct. Sam, you want to finish it?
I think you told me before that it resets the input field separator and the output field separator.
Yes. When it reconstructs $0, it reconstructs on output field separator. Okay. Well, this is a glaring hole in my talk, so let's just take it off the rails for a second, kick it around. Can anyone tell me why output field separator is different than input field separator? Or if someone doesn't understand those concepts, let me know and we can talk about that first.
For one thing, output field separator can't be space or a tab. It's got to be just something in particular. So it's going to be, you might want to set it to be colon, colons between all the fields.
Now the default output separator is basically spaces or tabs. It's a white space separator by default.
Output field separator is a white space. Man, this is so making me so happy, Spitzer. Okay, I put it on T for you. You with the martini, sir.
The output field separator, I think, gets used when a comma is used in a print.
That's true. That's true.
And it defaults to a space.
It does default to a space. It does not default to a space or a tab, like the gentleman said. Input field separator is a regular expression. Okay. Output field separator is a string. The same goes for input record separator and output record separator, where output record separator is a string and an input record separator is a regular expression. And like the comma delimiting things in print, when you print, print appends output record separator at the end of a print statement. That does not happen if you use printf. Okay, so inside of our begin block, we're doing this nice for loop. And this for loop sets I equal to 1, I less than or equal to nf, and then I plus plus. And then inside of this, we do if $i double equals user. And if that's the case, we set ufield equal to I. And you can't see it because I can't figure out how to scroll on this thing when it's zoomed in. But the next line says if $i double equal to literal percent CPU, set C field equal to I. So the interesting thing of note here is this $i. Okay. Can anyone tell me what the $i does? You, sir.
It's the loop variable on the line above it.
Dollar I is or I is?
The value of I, and then it's a meta variable on the positional parameters, so that you're going through each of the fields.
You are going through each of the fields.
You're gonna test $1, then $2, then $3.
Yes. So that's correct outside of the meta variable bit. Can anyone tell me what the dollar sign actually is in awk? It's kind of a fun one.
Well, it's a field indicator. It's indicating that it's referring to a field in your input. So the I would be a variable number rather than just 1, 2, 3. Always field 1, 2, or 3.
True.
Field whatever I value of I is at that time. Field 1, field 2, field 3.
That's true. So basically, dollar sign is a unary operator. Okay, it's actually the highest precedence unary operator in awk. So unlike in shell, where dollar sign basically denotes the beginning of a variable that's not being assigned, or I guess PHP does that too. This actually is a unary operator that says the expression directly to my right is to be evaluated as an integer inside of the field list. Okay. And so that expression might be a constant integer, like 1, 2, or 0. That expression might be a variable integer. That expression might be a parenthetically bounded complex mathematical operation. So I could do dollar open paren I minus 1 here. And that would evaluate to the I minus 1th field.
Is that any different than any shell? Or any typical BASIC shell or Bourne shell?
It is. For example, to get the value of an evaluated expression in Bourne shell, for example, or a FreeBSD shell or a BASIC shell, you can do like dollar double paren, which indicates to evaluate the inner value of the double paren thing. To actually get to a on-the-fly constructed positional argument in shell requires you to use eval most times. I think bash has ways to do that are a little nicer. KSH probably does too. But I don't use that garbage. That was for you, Baxter.
Do you know how to pan on the Mac?
No idea.
So
I don't actually use this thing. This is like
so usually if you hold down the control key and use two fingers to scroll, it will zoom in.
Whoa.
And you may be able to do what you want that way. So then if you move the mouse, it'll move around the page.
Wow.
What?
Holy crap.
That's our next meeting.
A whole new found respect for Steve Jobs. Wait, how did you say I move it around again?
So you move it around just by moving the mouse. Just move the
let go of the control key.
Move the use the trackpad to move
around
and
first.
Scroll.
Zoom first.
Okay.
Zoom first, and then just drag down, and it'll move. It'll start to move.
You may have to hit the edge of the screen before it moves.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh man, this is so sweet.
Holy shit.
I wonder if they have this to split.
Alright.
So, I guess I should hold on a second.
Yeah,
zoom in and then move. Yeah, make a full screen and then zoom.
Alright, there we go. Dude, this is earth shattering. The talks everywhere. Sweet. Alright. Thank you so much, dude. That is awesome. Can anyone see this now, or should I keep doing the Zoom trick thing that I just learned?
Yeah, why'd you wait so long? I should have said it at the beginning.
Sorry, I realized
he has martini first.
I know the dislodged information hidden in the brain.
Oh, man. So great. Okay. So here we basically, these two lines barf, and what you can see from this example is that you basically have C-style syntax here. You have C-style control structures insofar as you have for loops, you have C-style if statements, open curly brackets. These should all be things that are very familiar to someone who's using C. In fact, the POSIX standard for awk punts entirely on nearly the whole language by saying, see the section on C-inspired languages, which is pretty awesome. So this guy's new here down in the N block, in our N pattern. We have a for user in users. Okay, so users here is a hash. And can anyone tell me, when I iterate through user in users, what user is here before I scroll and give away the answer? Like
key?
It is a key. Yes. It's not the value. This is not like in Python or Ruby or other languages like that. You're getting the key back. For bonus points, can anyone tell me how the one true, what order the one true awk returns keys? Because the POSIX standard actually says that the keys are returned in no particular order. But yesterday I figured out something weird that caused a huge bug in my code.
Reverse order.
What?
Reverse order.
Reverse order. What do you mean by last?
Reverse lexicographic order.
Okay, so we have reverse lexicographic order. Do I have another guess over here?
Reverse, like, based on order of insertion?
It's LIFO. Pretty awesome. So in the one true awk, lists are actually stacks. It's nice, sort of, sometimes. So,
do you know if all the other awks do the same thing, or if it's only in one true awk that this is true?
I know the POSIX standard is completely silent and says, you know, don't assume anything. I don't actually have access to a machine with geawk on at the moment, which is kind of great. so I couldn't tell. I've only messed around with mawk a little bit, so I don't know exactly what order that goes in, but I would assume it's similar because it's a pretty nice simplifying implementation decision to use a stack. It also seems to me to make sense in line with the language, because the entire language is basically a stack language, more or less.
Is there a common pattern for reversing that?
Yeah. You could keep popping them off and putting them back on. I don't know. I think the trick that you use if you don't want to do this, if you don't want it in LIFO order, you want to go in some particular order, is to use integers for keys, and then do a don't loop using in, so loop using, you know, I equals one, I less than length array. So awk has a length function that you can use to get the length of the array.
If you depend on the LIFO, you can do a for loop like you do, and build a new list using the same keys and assert them as they come off the stack, and then iterate that list, and that'll make the result.
That's true. So his suggestion is that you could pop them off into another array, and that new array would be in reverse order. Well, you can't pop because you can't pop an awk, but you could access and then delete, I guess. Okay, let's keep the Zoom thing going. So we've introduced a bunch of new ideas in this last bit of awk that we looked at here, we covered most of them actually on the previous slide. The point here is that we have the ability now inside of the data to access headers, so we can see where the data we're actually interested in lives. We can determine where it lives positionally. We can use that to construct our lists, and so you can see. Well, maybe you can't, I keep changing slides. The list, maybe now in the back you can see the list. You can see that this list is functionally identical to the previous one, but that you can now generate this list without always using PSAUX. Although, I don't know if anyone actually uses PS without those three options ever. I've heard of it in legends. You could drop the U option, and I could get back a list of, you know, all of my processes. Get formatted exactly like this. The one big problem with this this particular program we have is that it's 17 lines long, and it's in a string on the command line. And we've gone kind of far away from what the founding fathers sort of wanted us to do with awk, which is one and two liners. In fact, awk as an interpreter is more like sed, where the normal case is to send a program on the command line, as opposed to the normal case being to take a file and interpret it, like shell or other programs. So actually, you can send a file full of commands, but you have to send it by an option, which actually kind of comes back to screw us. We'll get to that in a minute. zoom back out. Dude, that is so awesome. Thank you for that. Alright, so...
Happy New Year.
Sweet. I can't do that. Play that right now. So because that one was basically too long, we get into sort of a separate section of Bach, where you have all these one-liners and two-liners, and that's really the way the language was intended to be used. But as we just saw, we made this really rockin' report from basically a table with headers, and we were able to write the whole thing in 17 lines, and it's actually pretty robust. I mean, it lets us know when there's an I/O error and fails reliably. It lets us know when the data is malformed, when the headers aren't there, and we were able to accommodate all of that in 17 lines. The I/O error detection and malformed data detection alone in C would have cost us probably 4 or 5 times that 17 lines. So you can write programs in awk, real ones. And it's actually pretty damn good as a prototyping language, although I would say probably second to Shell, because the facility for I/O redirection is substantially more limited, and while you do have the ability to exec more easily than in C or in Python, it's not nearly as nice as Shell. But you do, if your operation is data intensive and your data is two-dimensional and well-structured, you get a hell of a lot for free. So I'm going to talk about a little example program I wrote that actually has a real-world application. And so the need of this program is that we need to translate tabular data to JSON. And we need to basically yield a JSON string per record that I get in a tabular format. JSON is my preferred serialization format, but as far as real-world application of this, you might do this for a sort of really misguided, cheap, poor man's ORM. Or, more reasonably, you might use this as a preprocessor for cache. So I might, have a bunch of well-formatted files, or a Berkeley database, or a constant database, or MySQL, or Postgres, or whatever. And I might want to yield tabular data and then turn that into JSON, which I then pass off to Memcache or CDB or whatever.
Don't forget CDB.
I said CDB twice.
I did.
Am I not speaking loud enough?
You did.
CDB, constant database. Is everyone familiar with constant database?
No.
If you don't know about constant database, I would suggest seeking out Mr. William Eric Baxter in the back of the room. He's probably the best to talk about it. Constant database is an immutable open hash map implementation that's faster than Berkeley database. It was written by DJB, and that's probably a good place for me to stop talking about it. Please, no one ask who DJP is.
It's
Shut up. Can someone sitting near Spitzer throw something on him? There were a whole bunch of jokes about you in this talk, by the way, about how you'd probably be the only one here who knew what Lex was, or who claimed to know what Lex was, probably. I dropped him because I liked you until like 10 minutes ago. Okay, so before we got off track with constant databases, we were talking about caching, and constant database is a method of caching. It's not really a very useful method of persistent storage, because you can't change it without rebuilding the entire thing every time. I want to write this tool, and this tool takes me from tabular data to serialized data. And I decide that awk is very good at transforming data, particularly two-dimensional data, so I decided to write this program that I need in awk. But I don't want to hard-code it on the command line. And what I want to do is I don't want to waste my time, because I want to spend all of this time that I'm going to spend prototyping all of the bits of this program to actually do the most important thing when you're writing programs, at least to my mind, which is to get the interface right, okay? To figure out what your feature set needs, to do requirements gathering. And so when I finally end on an implementation, I basically want to take the implementation I have and either decide that the existing implementation is enough or decide that I'm going to translate this into a language that's more suited to what I ultimately end up doing. And Awk is really good at this, and in fact, it's really good at prototyping languages as well. And they remark on this in the Awk programming language book quite a bit. It's a really slick prototyping tool. Yeah, there's no way how you're going to see that. This is my pretty small program. I'll make it bigger. You guys see that? Alright. So the first thing you'll notice is that I have a shebang. And the shebang is kind of weird because it's got dash F in there. That's the Awk shebang. The dash F basically says, take my file name, put it after the dash F, and dash F takes an option and tells Awk to interpret the contents of that file as the program, as opposed to the contents of the first argument, the first positional argument to the Awk interpreter as the program. So the first thing you'll notice is I have this little function escape. And anyone here that's a little more familiar with Awk, care to venture guess as to why I have a variable dupe defined here, and then the first thing I do in the function is set dupe equal to val, which is also passed in. Alan Garreau, is that your hand?
Yes.
Alan Garreau. Gsub does operate in place, so that's part of the puzzle.
And how do you introduce a new variable? Could you, a new local variable?
What's a local variable? We're talking about Awk here. That's basically the point. In Awk, everything's fully automatic. And everything is as dangerous as things that are fully automatic are as a result. And there's only one way to have a local variable, and that is to not have a variable. It's to have a parameter. So variables that are defined, or parameters that are defined in function definition, are local to the function. And everything else, no matter where it's created, is global, including inside of functions, inside of for loop conditions. So if you have for I equals 1, every single place in your program has I, every place. So this pattern, Awk does not require the right number of arguments to be sent to a function, the right number of parameters. So you can define as many parameters as you like. And in fact, in the Awk man page, Kernighan tells you to define every single variable you intend to use locally inside of that function as a parameter in the function definition. And that's a really just horrible kludge right there. But that's actually the suggested best practice when using Awk. So let's go down a little bit. There we go. That's Barf, our old friend. We'll have a POSIX standard someday.
Yeah, it'll save 3 lines.
What?
If you get it in the standard, you save 3 lines.
Yeah, exactly. It's only important that it exits 111. Why it has to exit 111 is another conversation for another time. So, we have a begin block. And this begin block uses sprintf to define a field separator for us. And the reason it does this, does anyone know what ASCII-9 is off the top of their head?
Tab.
So that's pretty much the only not disgusting way I've found to actually get a literal tab inside of a quote in Awk. So again, we get the first line, which is the header line. And then we do this nice thing here, where we iterate again over all of the arguments. And, crap. Doesn't make anyone seasick, I'm sorry. And then we escape it, okay? And what we're doing in escape is basically escaping double quotes, because those are used in JSON to delimit strings. And we're setting the value of headers at I equal to the escaped value of the field at I. Whoa. Okay. So if we have headers at all, or if we don't have headers at all, we barf. So we've got, you know, rich error condition handled. And then we start to construct a JSON string. Okay. So this is inside of what's called the null pattern. The null pattern is just the lack of a pattern. Okay. The POSIX standard for AUX says that you either must have a single Boolean value, a combined Boolean value that's done with ands or ors, a comma separated list or of two conditions, or nothing. And if you have nothing, everything matches. So we start to construct a JSON string, and we're using sprintf a lot. And we sort of touched close to this earlier. Does anyone know how awk concatenates strings off the top of their head?
It's two variables or a string and variable next to each other. It's a space separating concatenation.
Space separating?
Not necessarily.
It just squashes them together.
Yeah, it's juxtaposition based. It's really kind of...
It's variables in the program. You can separate them with a space.
Right, so if it's two variables, you separate it with a space. And if it's variables and constants, you can separate it with a space or use the empty string operator.
It doesn't. Two variables will not separate with a space unless you use a comma. You actually need for print that's
right there. No, comma separated values in awk, if they are concatenating, it's based on the fact that they're being invoked by a built-in, and that will concatenate them based on the output field separator. If you just want to concatenate strings, it's just a space operator. It's really probably the second worst feature of the language.
What was the first worst?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to wrap it up here. Jesus. Come on over shots, please.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, I was going for content heavy. I think I might have...
You succeeded.
Awesome.
You're doing great. You're doing awesome.
Yeah.
Hey,
you guys, the rest of you guys need to start grinding like this 5 minute right here. That sound a lot better.
So what do you want to shout out?
Why was that singular?
It's a big glass.
All right, so at the end we sub out the last comma and replace it with a curly brace, and this creates a JSON string. And I was going to demo this, but I'll spare you all that, you know, 20 or 30 minutes. And then we print out this JSON string that we constructed. It's awesome. It's a really awesome program, seriously. Okay, that's too big. Now I know why it took me so long to write the damn talk, because I wrote 5 talks worth of talks. I just locked my computer. Woot. Alright. So, this program works pretty well, and I can set it a bunch of tab separated value files, or pipe it in even, from MySQL, which is what this example does. And that's pretty sweet, because now I can cache from MySQL, I can cache from Postgres, I can cache from tab-separated value files. But what I want to do is now cache from comma-separated values. So I want to do this with the dash s option. And I'll go to this next slide just to show you that to add an option to my awk program is a diff that's this size. And that size, because you can't see it, is obviously very small. And so the important bit here is that a very important feature of a prototyping language is that you can change the interface with minimal diff. Okay. And the diff here is about 11 lines, and most of the 11 lines didn't even come from the option that we added. Most of the 11 lines came from the fact that we didn't have any options before, and so we had to add all the mechanics for any arguments handling it all. And awk has no getOpt. Okay. So we added all this stuff, and then the nasty bit here is that, well, it doesn't work. When I try to use my new option, I get this error, awk can't open file comma. If there was a file comma, you would not get that error, and you would be a little, maybe more screwed. Because it would definitely open the file, if it could. So the problem is that awk thinks that this dash s flag is for it, okay? And it's really for our program, it's our option, not the interpreter's option. And the reason for this is that awk hasn't received the positional argument yet, because all we sent was dash f. Okay. Dash f, and then the name of our file was replaced here, and so what we have is the ability to keep adding options, because we haven't yet either hit the dash dash argument, which says I'm done with options, and I get positional arguments now, or a positional argument. Okay, so let's go into shebang land, and let's change our shebang to shebang user bin awk, dash f, dash dash. That gives another error, can't open file, dash dash. Anyone know why that gives me that error? Got nothing to do with awk, to be that hint. Either of you two fine gentlemen, and not Spitzer.
Because the shebang functionality just places the name of the script after the string that it got following the shebang.
Yes. So shebang has no POSIX standard. It's horrible, actually, that shebang has no POSIX standard. And so shebang is actually implemented a whole slew of different ways everywhere. FreeBSD, though, has this really nice feature of env, where env has a dash capital S option, wherein you can have it interpolate all those arguments as though it was shell, and then add all of these other magical arguments into it that all do all sorts of great wonderment. It's actually really sweet. The problem is that FreeBSD is the only operating system on the planet that has this feature. And it says very explicitly at the bottom of the man page that you should not use this if you care about portability. And if you don't care about portability and you're using NOC, anyway. The answer here is actually quite simple. The answer is that you should just write a shell wrapper. Okay? And what you should do is you should take your table to JSON awk program, and you should make it not executable, and you should throw it somewhere where things that are not executable go, like lib. Not slash lib, but like something slash lib. And then you should tell awk to go look at that file by saying, you know, $0, this pattern basically says look in my present working directory, the directory that my executable is in, my shell wrapper is in, slash lib, awk to JSON. And this wrapper will pretty much work for every awk program you're ever going to write. And it's really simple. It just execs awk. And then sends dash if, sends the name of your awk file, tells it that I'm done with options now for the interpreter, and then passes it $@. And this will work on every Unix except for, who's got me? Solaris. Yes. Okay. We don't care about that. This is a nice bug, not nice, terrible old operating systems. So, I'm just going to ignore this slide because we're way over time. I'm really sorry to all you guys about that. But this is a four-line diff that adds, or a six-line diff that adds another option that's a dash zero that delimits the output not by n, but by null bytes, and the reason for that is so that you can put it to xargs dash zero, and if any of you are not familiar with that feature of xargs, please man xargs and slash dash zero. It's pretty awesome. And then man find and look up print zero, because pretty mind-blowing, almost like they planned it. All right, I'm gonna blow through this. Limitations and idiosyncrasies, there are a bunch, but there are a few that are important. Awk's not a general purpose programming language. This is just not. It can't do things. It can't import or eval, which is a big problem. Geoc can, regular awk can't. This makes your programs grow unwieldy at like crazy pace. Really, if you could, if you can't import, like program an awk for a while, and you'll really learn to love imports. The only arbitrary execution that you have is the system built-in, which execs, or strings that are interpolated to be shell commands. There's no support for low-level I/O, okay? You can't read byte-wise, you can only read record-wise. You can't do that even if you're using Gitline. There's no support for file descriptors, and there's minimal support for I/O redirection. There's no multidimensional data structures. You can spoof it with variable, comma, variable, and an array name, but that doesn't really do much for you. You can't iterate over x, comma, star, for example. Okay, so it's pretty much useless. I don't even know why it's in the language. And then awk is really just for text. And more specifically than that, awk is really just for ASCII. Awk is pretty notorious for not handling Unicode very well, unless your system is set up to handle it. Geoc actually does this very well. But you know, even worse than that, if you like xargs-0 or other programs that use null bytes, which are valid ASCII characters, awk just drops them on the way in. And actually, a lot of programs do this. Shell's read built-in does this. Bash's doesn't, and it should. Awk has no bitwise operations, but printf is capable of emitting nulls, which is how we get our -0 feature. Awk is actually really hideous sometimes, and this is what I was talking about earlier. For I equals 1, you do all this stuff, you call a function, that function has for I equals 1. Okay, you're conditioned to do this as a programmer. This for loop is going forwards, this for loop is going backwards. You're hosed. And figuring this out for the first time when this hits you is like 2 days of your life you're never going to have back. Reconstruction of $0 on assignment, we covered this earlier. Assignment actually is as simple as $1 equals $1 will cause $0 to be reconstructed. Okay, any assignment to any field, including $0. And then best practices. Don't use juxtaposition to concatenate strings. Use sprintf. This is the bit we talked about earlier, define parameters for local variables. And this one basically is to get around the $0 rebuilding. Just always assign to another variable. Don't assign to any fields. This one, people on the internet will tell you to do this one all the time. I'll make it bigger so that you know that the internet's evil. Yeah, this guy. Oh, I want to strip off the first field. Oh, we'll just set $1 equal to empty string. Well, then you have to sub out field separator at the beginning of the line, which they never tell you to do on the internet. And then after all of that is done, if you set -f on the way into your interpreter, you just basically ran awk and tr at the same time without really intending to. So if you're field separating on colon and you don't set ofs, you're going to have a nice space delimited list of things coming out. It's confusing. So this is the second to last slide. So congratulations to all of you for making it through this. Sorry.
I'm not the only one.
I thought it was just Matt and Mark talking.
Spencer.
Oh.
We covered way too much stuff and possibly too little, but my first talk. Sorry. Basically, there are a bunch of things you can do with awk that are fun that we didn't cover today. And the amount of times you run into structured two-dimensional data sets is really large, actually. HTTP headers, for example, are two-dimensional structured data sets that are well-ordered and easily delimited by colon space, so are SMTP headers. So if you have a mail client or an HTTP client that needs tested, and you have something like Netcat or TCP server or something that can give awk access to a socket on standard in, you're pretty much made in the shade for writing a simple one-line HTTP server that will always return whatever status you want and print out debugging information to standard out for you. I would invite you to add more if you like more fun uses for all group. Or I can just put you out of your misery and everyone can go drink.
Drink.
What? Drink? Yes.
Drink.
So
we've been drinking.
Drink more, drink at the bar.
This is my favorite AHO quote about awk, and this will be it for me. Nonetheless, the program has not proven to be unworkably slow. which is true, and you found that really surprising. Thanks.